Hi, this is Larry Wilson, and this is How to Talk to Humans. This is the podcast that shows you how to improve your communication skills. Are you looking to get a better job? Are you looking to find a relationship? Are you trying to do things in your life that have frustrated you and eluded you so far? I can show you so easily how to change that. Now, I can only do it with humans. If you're looking to deal with vampires or zombies, extraterrestrials, this is not the show for you. But if you're really looking to improve your communication skills, I can show you what I've learned from 40 years in show business working with the biggest celebrities and superstars in the world, and their secrets are unbelievable. What I'm going to be teaching you during the course of this podcast every week are tools that you can use to communicate toward success. Hi, this is Larry Wilson. Thanks for joining me once again for another episode of How to Talk to Humans. The more we do this show, the more amazing results are coming in from you people that really surprise me and astound me. And we'll get into more of those in future episodes, but I feel like I should have some sort of sound effect in the background of breaking news. And as always, it's something that is, I think, incredibly pertinent to communication. I just heard that O.J. Simpson had passed away. Now, I'm certainly not going to relitigate that case or, you know, get into any of that. But there were a couple of things that struck me. I heard it must have been on the radio, I guess. I heard a broadcaster who was, you know, talking about it and explained that even in later life, even after all the things that he'd gone through, wherever he went, he would draw a crowd of people. And the broadcaster concluded this little snippet about O.J. by saying, he was a born communicator. And a warning bell went off in my head. I thought, no, he wasn't. And I thought, wow, that must be a popular notion that there are people who are born communicators. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying it couldn't be. I've never seen it. All the greatest communicators I've ever worked with, I've ever been privy to spend time with, were not born that way at all. They pursued it, and they worked hard at developing their communication skills. And the only reason I thought this was worthy of your attention in this episode is because it's so common that we think, we hear someone give a speech or something and we think, wow, you know, they're just speaking off the top of their head. If it's a great speech, they aren't speaking off the top of their head. One of the things I emphasize again and again in Wilson Method is all this preparation is the difference between being a regular person fumbling around with communication or communicating like an expert. A lot of times the pushback comes from people who say, oh, that'll make me sound canned. That'll make me sound artificial and forced. The truth of the matter is a little, it's different than you would imagine it to be. It may really be the opposite of what you imagine it to be. The more preparation you put in, the more natural you can sound, the more relaxed. Because now you're not fishing around trying to find the exact words or phrase or idea. If you put in the time to prep what you're going to say, and this comes back on a prior episode, we talked about my idea of three D's to keep in mind, which was to determine your goal in communication, to define the transmission method, whether it was over the phone, whether it was in text, whether it was face-to-face, whether it was an email, all these different things require different techniques, so that you can then deploy the tools you learn in Wilson Method. Well, that first D, to determine your goal, it's one of those things that seems so simple, people are inclined to just skip over it. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know what I'm going to say. Well, if you just take a minute, take 60 seconds to really think clearly, what is the goal? And it shouldn't be a lot of goals. It should be a specific goal. If you're giving a speech, if you're giving a presentation, if you're speaking to three people in your company, or if you're speaking to a board of directors, or if you're speaking to a room of 500 current clientele, or maybe their future potential customer, whatever it may be, what is the one main goal you're really trying to accomplish here? Now, you may find, if you write that down, you may find, oh, well, I have certain other goals as well. But there's one that's the main goal. And this is so important to do, because once you have that goal, it becomes very, very easy for you to write out. It doesn't have to be word for word. It might just be bullet points. It might just be notes. You might just things to remind yourself of. But the act of writing them out helps to clarify them in your mind. And as I've said ad nauseum here, writing is rewriting. The more you work on it, the better it will get. It almost is mechanical in that it's almost impossible for it not to get better. The people who write and rewrite and rewrite, that's what makes extraordinary presentations, speeches, communication. It's not complicated. It's not something that you need some special degree from a university to do. It's just putting that time in. And the people who do that, it allows them to then relax and speak more authentically. You sound like yourself instead of sounding uptight. It doesn't make you sound artificial or forced. In fact, it can really free you to become a compelling presenter. It's not beyond anyone's grasp here. If you speak English well enough to understand what I'm saying, you have all the requisite skills to become a master communicator. And so I personally was a little bit offended to hear this newscaster refer to OJ as a born communicator, because I don't believe. And whatever you thought of him one way or another, I don't really feel is relevant here. I just know I'm interested in communication. When I see someone who is highly skilled, as you've seen me put a number of people as guests on this podcast, well, those people I do think are highly skilled communicators, and not a single one of them was born that way. And to be perfectly honest, I have to say also, hearing about OJ took me back. It's hard to believe it's been 30 years. But 30 years ago, when all that white Bronco chase, slow motion chase, took place. And one of the things I thought was interesting that I thought, again, was very germane to this podcast and our focus, that at least I hope the reason you're listening here is because you're interested in improving your communication skills. there's a really interesting thing, and many people, there's books been written about O.J.'s case and all that sort of thing, but I personally feel that the reason he was acquitted in the criminal trial, I know this may sound like I'm oversimplifying, and perhaps I am, but I thought the real reason he was acquitted was because of that brilliant phrase Johnny Cochran came up with. If the glove does not fit, you must acquit. At first blush, you could think, well, that's silly, Larry. You know, that's a little too facile for what we're dealing with here. It couldn't be as simple as that. I don't know if it is or isn't. I don't know what was in the hearts and minds of the people on the jury, but I do know that our brains are hardwired to search for patterns. And I've talked about this in other episodes that you're welcome to go digging around trying to find of this podcast. It's simply the way we're hardwired. It's somehow how we were built. And it's interesting, of course, because as I pointed out in other regards having to do with magic, it's the way some magic effects work, is they're taking advantage of our desire to see patterns, sometimes when there is no pattern really existing. But in the case of if it does not fit, you must acquit, rhymes, and the reason that rhymes are appealing to us, and the reason that songs are appealing to us, is that our brains love those patterns. When something rhymes, it's fitting a specific pattern. When someone sings a song, frequently, if we've never heard the song before, unconsciously, our brain may be racing ahead trying to see if we can figure out what the rhyme scheme will be. If it's clever, I've often said, there's all kinds of examples of this, but I've often said that there's a great, great example of this in the song The Vatican Rag. Song written by Tom Lehrer, the satirist from the 1960s, actually probably even the early 50s in the 1960s, who wrote a number of fantastic songs. There was a television show at that time in the 60s called That Was the Week That Was. And Lehrer wrote some brilliant stuff. But there was a thing about the Vatican, them changing some of the rules of what some of the rituals would be in the Catholic Church. So Lehrer wrote this song that sounds like ragtime music called The Vatican Rag. And there's a rhyming couplet in there. Let me see if I can remember it. That's, I think, maybe the greatest rhyming couplet I've ever heard. He sings, get into that long processional, step into that small confessional. There's a guy who's got religional, tell you if your sin's original. Now, I may be biased in some way. I think that rhyming couplet of, there's a guy who's got religion, who'll tell you if your sin's original, maybe one of the greatest rhymes I've ever heard in my life. It, you know, and of course, a lot of Lehrer's stuff is like that. It's hugely, hugely clever. When you hear things like that, they stick in your brain. Well, isn't that what we want in all our communication? If we're taking the time and trouble and energy to communicate with someone, if you're just ordering a burger, well, then order it however you want. It doesn't matter. But the place that communication skills really come in is in business, is in our interactions, is in personal interaction with people. There are things that matter to us. And if we're saying something that is important to us and we feel may be valuable to share with someone else, whether it's one person, whether it's a group of people. Shouldn't we do our best to make it so well thought out and so sticky that they can never forget what we've said? Isn't this really the mark of the highest level of communication ability? I'm thinking now, I of course have listened to Tom Lehrer's records, and Lehrer is an interesting guy. He was actually a professor of mine at college, University of Santa Cruz, University of California at Santa Cruz. And he was a very nice guy. He was a mathematician. He's a very interesting guy. Those so many different things he wrote that I'm still able to retrieve from my brain instantly. Wouldn't you like to be able to communicate with that much power so that it doesn't have to be a genius song? And of course, I got the feeling that Lehrer didn't really take it seriously what he did. I think he just sort of thought it was sort of a funny kind of thing to do, and it was amusing, but I don't think he took it that seriously. You may have something that's really serious, that's really important to your business pursuits or to your family life or to interpersonal relationships or to creative endeavors that you have. Think how powerful that would be if you learn to be able to communicate those ideas in a way that 50 years from now, someone would instantly be able to retrieve what you said in their brain. They'd say, oh yeah, that person told me blah, blah, blah. And that would be extraordinary. And so it made me think about that OJ trial with Johnny Cochran. I am convinced that I'm not saying that Johnny Cochran did this consciously. I'm not, I mean, obviously he wrote that out. He didn't come up with that on the fly. But did he know that rhyming like that would make it impossible to forget? I don't know. But I believe that's one of the things. And particularly because I remember that that trial, this is, you know, for younger people, this may be hard to believe, but that trial was the first time that I could remember where DNA evidence was a major contributing factor in the trial. And it was so relatively new that the prosecution had to go to great lengths to try to explain what it was, how it worked, why it was reliable, all these different kinds of things. The defense obviously wanted to knock that down. And if you look at them, if you forget about anything emotional with this, if you just look at them in terms of their ability to communicate. Marcia Clark, I'll never forget this, she went on at great length about DNA evidence. Now, this is not a condemnation of her. It's really hard to present scientific data, very hard to present it in a way, I mean, maybe it's interesting particularly to scientists, but to lay people, and the jury is supposed to be relatively made up of lay people, that's very hard to communicate that sort of thing to them. But she tried, and I remember I was interested to hear what she had to say, and I could not hang with her. It just got so convoluted, and I understood a little bit of what it was about. I'd read some about it before that trial, but if you measure that, her long plodding, I got the feeling that she was convinced that just the facts were going to carry the day versus Johnny Cochran. Forget the facts. Let's have a nice rhyming couplet. If it does not fit, you must acquit. That's so much easier for the jury members to retain. They go, I can't remember how many months they were under sequestration, and they were kept from their families. They couldn't see the news. They couldn't watch television or read newspapers. They were locked in seclusion, you know, and finally they have to make a decision. All of Marcia Clark's complicated science testimony, impossible for them to be able to retain that, but easy to retain. If it does not fit, you must acquit. And I hasten to point out before someone writes me or calls me in outrage, I'm not saying this has anything to do with what's real. I'm not talking about this trial didn't present what's honest or real or truthful. I'm just saying it has to do with the two people's jobs. Marcia Clark for the prosecution and Johnny Cochran for the defense. If you're an attorney listening to this podcast, I hope that you just heard a little bell go off in your head. I'm sure I haven't been to law school, so I don't know what they teach you there now. But I'm sure they emphasize the point is not about truth. The point is about who can communicate best. That's what's going to carry the day if you're an attorney. And I don't mean that you have to now make your entire case in rhyming couplets. I only give it as an example of something that makes your communication particularly sticky, very, very hard for the recipient to forget it. And that, of course, is what we want. But you can do it in other ways as well. You can do it in your choice of vocabulary. You can present things. I'm sure if you are an attorney, you've heard litigators who used very colorful, evocative language that painted such a vivid picture for you. And then others who were very dry. And I'm not saying that one may be more effective than another. I just know that if you can speak to a jury in a way that they cannot forget what you said, you'll have much, much better results. I'm delighted that you all joined today. I have to tell you, in particular, I'm so thrilled at the response this podcast is getting. I'm going to talk more about it in a future episode, but let me just ask you, if you enjoyed this, do me a favor, won't you? And share it with two of your friends. And we can make this sharing a actually educational experience for you. If you just say, oh, you should listen to this, it's great. Well, that's very nice, very complimentary, and obviously not a bad thing to do. But think for a moment about what someone could tell you about a podcast. Not the specifics, not what was discussed, but either how it made them feel, or what it made them think about, or how it stimulated them in some way. Think about those things and think how much more effective that is and how much more likely someone is to go and look it up. If you say to them, oh, the podcast is called How to Talk to Humans. Well, that's kind of interesting. So I'm hoping to reach a larger and larger audience all the time. If you're enjoying it, please take a moment, write an email to two people, or send a text, or call someone old school style on the phone and tell them, oh, I just listened to this, I think you'll really enjoy it, or whatever you feel about it. And think about what you might express that would really capture their imagination. Just two friends. I'd be so grateful. And I will see you again next week with another episode of How to Talk to Humans.
This has been Larry Wilson,
I want to thank you for spending this time with me, and I hope you found this information useful. If you're looking for more, you can find it at thewilsonmethod.com. There's a ton of stuff there. In fact, if you want, you can even speak to me because I'm human. Send me an email at info@wilsonmethod.com because I read every single one. I hope that you'll join us next week in this continuing journey, and you'll be with me for the next episode of How to Talk to Humans.